Well, my speech will be on something that is not really popular in economics, except popular in the founder of economics, Adam Smith, that is, which mind of social action? What is the model of mind of social action? In a few lines, I will criticize the cognitive model of social action that I introduced 20 years ago in the methodological collectivism, that was the cognitive approach to methodological individualism that I introduced at that time. And because of many reasons, because of the emergence of a different approach in cognitive science, which is called widened body cognition, because of the limit of decision making, and because also of the importance of analyzing the action according to the problem solving model that was introduced by Simon, and that merged with the widened body cognition may give you a new model of action that I dub an active problem solving. Everything about this will introduce this new approach that we may dub embodied individualism. That is something that may synthesize what I want to say. Raymond Boudon is a very nice photo of Raymond Boudon that I found. I don't know if it was the wife that did this photo. We wrote in 2000 an article titled "Risk of Cognition Society." We were saying that if social theory has to be policy relevant, it has to use and not to unrealistic model of man, even thought any model represented drastic simplification of the real world. This was a critique of Homo Sociologicus and Homo Economicus, and was the main tenet was that the point that we like to develop is a sketchy fashion is that sociological analysis needs a third model that we call it the rational model in the broad sense, that it takes the form of the subject X as good thought, possibly objectively invalid reason for doing Y. And this is more or less the bounded rationality approach that was introduced as a third model. This was the two book about methodological cognitivism, that is a collection of the work that I made at the end of the 80s until 2012 and 2013. The main principle, I don't want to focus on the methodological cognitivism, but the main principle, philosophical principle, were causal explanation, and the reference was Reichenbach, Solomon, Mackie, causal realism, Lewis, Harman, and Goldman, identity theory in the philosophy of mind, Paul and Patricia Churchill mainly, but also other, naturalizing epistemology, the approach of Quine, but also Goldman, Stitch, and the most important approach in epistemology in the last 40 years, and theory of rationality, the model was bounded rationality, starting, I may say, philosophically by the famous article by Jonathan Cohen, Can Human Rationality Be Experimentally Demonstrated?, connected to Boudon, ma particularly to Simon, and in the last 20 years to Gigerenzer for the adaptive ecological approach to bounded rationality. And the two sides of the methodological cognitivism were one the descriptive side and the other normative side. The descriptive side is what kind of cognitivism was dominant in the 90s that then was the reference of methodological cognitivism. And the normative side, what theory rationality was in this approach. I will not deal with the second part of the normative side, that instead is the most important topic during this conference, because I did in the last 3 years, every speech was about this approach. Instead, I want to focus on the descriptive side. And what kind of cognitivism was dominant in the 90s, but was not is not sufficiently supported by the studies and the new data in cognitive science. And in cognitive science is emerging a different approach respect to what was dominant in the 90s. In the 90s was dominant, we may say, a conjunction between a Cartesian approach to mind, to disembodied mind, and what we may say brain in the vat, as in the famous Hilary Putnam and Harman metaphor. What is the Cartesian mind or cognitivism that was the model of mind of Herbert Simon and also of Kahneman Tversky, and that that accepted, that comply with information processing psychology? Allora, they believe in a modularity of mind. Any model is impermeable. They start from this metaphor of the relation between mind and brain as software and hardware in the computer, typical of functionalism of Hilary Putnam. They are dualist about the property, as in Davidson's theory. They think that thinking and reasoning is only digital computation and symbolic manipulation, and also the mental representation are a model. Then they have nothing to do with the sensation, with the motor input, with the visceral input, and so on. They are a model. They are neutral, as in Descartes' representation of the mental. Of the mind. But when we have this approach of disembodied mind, the problem is how do you deal with the neuropathological effect, with the neuropharmacological effect, with psychiatric disorder, with something that has to do with the material dimension of mind. And connected to this is the shift to what I call brain in the vat. That is typical neuroeconomics. Colin Kammerer, George Lowenstein, that they are the leader of neuroeconomics, they believe in the importance to analyze mind, but this mind is, as in the Cartesian model of mind, is detached from the body and from the environment. Something that is separated. And obviously, it is a progress respect and disembodied mind of a Cartesian approach, but in any case, even in this case, there are some problems that are not solved. The famous model of this brain in the vat is the David Marr three levels of cognition, the computational algorithm, and the neural substrate. Is the most important model that is used in cognitive science according to this approach. But this approach also puts some questions. I have to see my time because...
Go on.
There are some questions. How is possible to avoid the causal influence of affective stimuli, sensorial inputs, motor and proprioceptive stimulation, visceral sensation, and so on? And the answer in the last 15 years was what I dubbed narrow embodied cognition. Narrow embodied cognition, and one of the most important support is Alvin Goldman and Vignemonde, that is a neuroscientist, believe that the body play an important role through the brain model representation of its state. Then they accept that there is something beyond the brain, that is the body, but everything should be in the brain format. Then the brain format or everything that is outside brain are purely internal to the brain, and there is no interest in understanding the body interacting and embedded in the environment. And this is an embodied cognition in a narrow style. But then there are the question that this narrow approach may put to the researcher. Allora, We know that body influences action without being represented in the brain, a question. There are so many answers, people act in relation to possible answers from the environment, and this is the, all the tradition about affordancy of Gibson. This is the mistake, not Gibson, Gibson. The Gibson affordances. We interact with the environment, and we interact for this chair, for also in the social dimension, in relation with the possibility that this person, this object, allow us in an interaction. And the environment give us possibility of action. Or Husserl was dubbing this what the I can about what is outside my mind. Or Gallagher introduced the concept of enacting. Second, situational context is very important, where the agent is embedded. The same person in a different context has a different kind of approach to the solution of the problem. And this is also maybe used the term of Heidegger Dasein. Third, the active information are not only deposited in the brain, but are extended in the environment. And this is the approach of extended cognition of some philosophers like Chalmers that underline the importance that we think not only the infrastructure, not only what we have in the brain, but also outside the brain, what we may use as external device to reason and to solve problem. And what is most important is the data conflict in neuropsychology about the role of the entire body and of the environment that shape the action, so the real concept of embodiment that is something that now the cognitive science has become the most important focus of research. And then this, from this point of view, we introduced the four model, why embody cognition. The cognition embody and acting extended and embedded. The psychological experience does not correspond only to the central computational cognitive function, but also to those of the body. The extraneural structural feature of the body, the extraneural of the body, shape our cognitive experience. The way the body is made is binocular vision, is vertical position, is peculiar rotation of the back and neck, and its manual and movement skills are all characteristics that determine the perceptual and cognitive style. And from this point of view, there are interesting studies about the axis hand, body, and brain that show how much is important the relation between hand and brain in solving problems. Moreover, and this is also connected to Damasio somatic market concept, also gut feeling of Miguel Enzer, the visceral stimuli that derive from the intestine, that is called the second brain inside the cognitive science, act on emotional, sensorial, perceptual, and cognitive level. And somatic marker is one of the discovery was made by Damasio and some other neuroscientists that show that in our decision making is important also what the body tells us about the expectation of the result of the decision. We have to decide a date, and it's not only a kind of a symbolic manipulation of the utility, probability, and so on, but it's also the body that tells us if it is good or not to meet this person. And the somatic markers are causally effective in determining the decision. Then the body regulates the brain as much as the brain regulates the body. this is a kind of schema, embodied, embedded, inactive, and extended about the cognition. But the new question then, if these are the new representation, new approach about cognition, what are the consequences of this widened body cognition of methodological collectivism? What kind of theory of social action is implied by wide embodied cognition? And this is where I am going to introduce and to develop the concept on embodied individualism. And this is made before criticizing the decision-making paradigm. And criticize the decision-making paradigm because we think from many point of view that the psychology of decision-making is slave of the decision-making theory of in the tradition for Norman Morgenstern and Savage. They use the same normative approach, but they use also the same concept that are in the decision-making formal model of von Norman Morgenstern. And the founder of psychology decision-making, Ward Edwards, began in the 50s to carry out laboratory experiments on how people decide. Ward Edwards was the boss of Tversky, for example. His experiment has two fundamental characteristics that for me are weaknesses, more than characteristics. Allora, the provision of subject expected utility are a normative reference. Then the experimental work has the aim to evaluate when now the human decision making deviates from the requirement of subject expected utility. And this is typical of behavioral economics mainstream of today. Kahneman, Tversky, Taylor, the normative reference is the subject expected utility. The other feature is that experiments are not carried out in a real decision context of everyday life, but in the abstract one of games, bets, and lotteries. Also, Kahneman, Tversky, the experiments that are done are mainly this kind of abstract and artifact way of deciding that in not what happened in the real life. Then the informative characteristics typical of the real environment are completely neglected, such as uncertainty, complexity, poor definition of data, instability of phenomena, dynamic and interactive change with the decision maker. Then is use a one-shot text in formal informal experiment that is as a feature of games that a lot. Then, as has been analyzed recently by Hertwig and Riaga, experimentation in decision psychology use experiment to represent description of statistical event, that usually games, in a one-shot timing, and not experience on which a probabilistic judgment is asked. And then some of the bias that have been discovered by Kahneman Tversky, if they were repeated in an experience format in which there is a continuous a repetition of the game, is not based on description, but is based on a real experience, and the context is ecological and not abstract, many biases disappear. The biases on time are an artifact of this kind of experiment. And this also is something that fail to comply with the Brunswick feature that are very important in the experimentation psychology. And that is about to be normal, ecological normal representative, continuous, and based on experiences. Then, from this point of view, the psychology decision making is may I call a subject expected utility avatar. Analytical processing is the most important part of decision making according to this approach. Processing probability statistics is the most effective course in making decisions, as characteristics are. Claiming, and in particular, when the decision maker decides, according to this abstract model, has to break the problem, analyzing every piece of information available, the possible alternative, the probability of the outcome, and the utility of the related consequences. In this way, the problem lose the phenomenological integrity and become fragmented in many pieces that the user are not what happened in the real life of the decision of the problem solving. Then, and also another aspect that this model is supposed to be universal, apply in every situation where structural problems, special risk and uncertainty, content of choice, and so on, with little or much information. Then, from this point of view, this traditional psychology decision making, in my opinion, show a strong weakness. What is the alternative? The alternative is the traditional problem solving that was introduced by Herbert Simon. It introduced problem solving study in public administration, industrial organization. And this is interesting because the subject expected utility was introduced mainly for the consumer behavior. Instead, the problem solving was introduced and studied particularly in organization. Because in the organization, apart the routine, most of the time there are new problems that are ill-structured and then should be coped with a problem-solving dimension. And decision-making, as in the subject-expected utility approach, doesn't tell how to reach a conclusion, a solution. And this is why the cognitive success that is an important aspect when we analyze the rationality of an action is very difficult to be understood according to the subject expected utility driven psychology. Because it is not interesting now to frame problem, set goals, develop heuristically a suitable course of action. Instead, the problem solving is not computation of a decision based on analytical database prediction activity, but on a pragmatic recursive process made up of many heuristic attempts and related positive or negative feedback from the environment. Is this dynamic coupling a feedback loop that bring the person to find a solution. And one of the best metaphor that Simon introduced in the science of artificial in 1981 is the ant on the beach. If you analyze this ant, as a geometrical figure, the path seems irregular, they seem made by a crazy animal. But in reality, this complexity is a complexity in the surface of the beach, not in complexity of the mind. So it has to adapt to the change in on the surface to find the proper path. Then it is the environment that drive is the path of the hand. It's not only the mind of the hand that do this. Then the interaction between environment and the mind of the ant explain why there is this kind of path. Then we can't study individual want, need or value detached from the context of the environment. That environment shapes and influences their behavior in a recursive way. And a procedural rationality of the end, so finding through proper heuristic a suitable behavior on the beach, generate is substantial rationality, that is the adaptivity to the irregularity of the beach. Then procedural rationality use heuristic, and this heuristic, according to the environment, define the proper path, that is the substantial rationality. That in any case, the environmental feedback, as Simon was saying, IT1, the most effective model in human action and problem solving. And he was doing a lot of examples in industrial design, in policy making, and so on, in which he showed how much is important logic of feedback because even in policy making, if you have to decide in urban planning, what kind of road to design. The first attempt has to cope with some critique, some feedback from the technician, from the need of the environment, the need of political need in the coalition, and so on. Then you have to change according to the feedback. The new proposal has to cope with other kind of situation that maybe there is an increase of the cost of energy, or there is something like connected to pollution, and then we have to cope with the new constraint. And at the end, this logic of feedback allow you to find a solution that is usually is not one shot, but is a repetitive recursive model of solution. Then the action leading to the solution manipulate the world in a recursive feedback process. The state description, for example, the urban planning described the how is the situation at the beginning, has to do with the process description that characterizes the step in manipulating the world through the heuristic to achieve the desired end. And this relation between state description and process description, that means the how to change the initial state, is what characterizes the problem solving. Yes, and then from this point of view, this the first description that I did about what are now the emerging approach to cognition, that is the widened body cognition, and the traditional problem solving may find a convergence in what I call an active problem solving. We see that the problem solving needs a result from action, then the phenomenological feedback selective direct us toward the final result. Then a problem solving and an action are part of the same phenomenon, an active problem solving, that is a dynamic process based on pragmatic recursive attempt and related positive or negative feedback from the environmental affordances. The affordance, as I told you, is the action possibility, what the environment tell you of what you may do or what you may not do. Then the concept of affordance, for example, has been used by Susten and Taylor in introducing the nudge. The nudge has to do with architecture of choice in which different affordances drive the decision making of the citizen towards certain choice and not other choice. And these the affordances, this design approach is also the first that was introduced was Donald Norman in the book about the design, in Italiano era La Caffetteria Masochista, in English, Design of Everything, in which he introduced the importance of, if you want to understand the designer of the object, you should rely on the affordance that you want to reach. Because any object speak to the user in a different way, according to the user, according also how is made the object. And Taylor and Sartre in the Nudge, in the first chapter, they refer to this book as an inspiration for the Nudge, as a way in which we introduce affordances that drive the decision maker of the citizen toward choices that are for their well-being. And this is also open a discussion about paternalism and so on, but it's not the case here. Then, from this point of view, this enactive problem solving is to conclude by the widened body cognition, because the way in which we interact with the environment is driven by our entire body, not by only by a Cartesian mind detached from the body or from the environment. Is the connection through the body. Through this interaction with the continuing and dynamic interaction with the environment that allow us to act finding the proper solution. And then from this point of view, we may say that there is an analogy between a problem space that was introduced by Simon and social affordances. This is a metaphor about the padlock and the key. A problem space is about a possible situation to be searched in order to find that situation which corresponds to the solution. And the dynamic interaction with the problem space is important to overcome the functional fixedness, as in many tests and problems in gestalt psychology, like the Kandel problem. And there is then a similarity of social problem space, what is in a society your problem space, to the active interaction and coupling with the social and environmental affordances. And as in the problem space in the usual problem solving, in the social problem solving, that is in an active problem solving, social problem space is about a possible solution that are enacted by the social affordances. The social affordance means something like, this is I want to show some social affordances. For example, in a football match, the affordance number one is the space between two defenders. You know that there is a possibility to cross the ball in this space. This is a kind of possibility that the game give to you. In this interior design in an office, how it is situated, the desk, the chair, the position of the person, allow you to interact in a different way. The interior design shapes your way of interacting. Then how it is designed are based on different affordances that communicate to the human being. Or there are digital affordances, like in virtual reality, for example. Or, for example, you can perceive, for example, the requirement of new learning space in a separate way, but interacting to find a common solution that is a design based on affordances. Then there are many, many different examples that we may do about what does it mean social affordances. In any case, this may be a kind of representation of the relation between inactive problem solving, social environmental affordances, therefore social action, feedbacks from the social action about if the social action is suitable, is adaptive or not, and if it's not adaptive, another loop of inactive problem solving and so on. In this situation, dynamic situation, at the end you arrive to a final action that represents the solution that you found to be more adaptive or to have success in solving this particular social problem.
È finito.
Then I don't analyze the neuroscience of this social problem solving, but in any case I can for example, this is the connection between stimulus, social perception, social cognition, social behavior that is supported by different part of our neural structure, sensor and association cortex, amygdala, orbital frontal cortex, cingulate cortex, and the final motor cortex, basal ganglia, hypothalamus, brain stems. What I may only tell that reading here, our planning and problem solving involve behavioral responses that depend on the behavior of the others. To put it simply, it is not the brain per se, but the brain body, by means of this interaction with the world of which it is part, that enacts our cognitive capacities. Finally, the proper development of this functional architecture of brain-body environment scaffold the more cognitively sophisticated social cognitive ability, including linguistic and conceptual, that constitute constitute our rationality. And to conclude, we have seen that in the descriptive side, social action may be described by an active problem solving, and an active problem solving is explained by white and body cognition driven heuristics. The normative side we have not analyzed, but I may synthesize that social action is assessed by adaptive ecological boundary rationality, and ecological boundary rationality is described by the adaptive success in social tasks, and this is judged by accuracy, frugality, speed, simplicity of the solution by an active problem solving. Yeah, and thanks for your embodied boundary rationality, and these are two articles, a chapter in Companion of Assembly in which I described this, also an article in Frontier in Psychology that's been published now about an active problem solving, boundary rationality in neuroscience. I also, before we were speaking about nudging, MIT Press has published my book about nudging, which I made a critique of some aspect of nudging, particular relating to boundary rationality, and also to manipulation of system one nudging that I find that are not libertarian, but are paternalistic, like a default state, something like this, and proposing something different that increase the autonomy of decision making, of problem solving, of the citizen individual. Thank you very much. Thank you.